As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the Modern Adventurer podcast, where explorers and adventurers tell their stories. Coming up.
And the most important point, I would say, is that you recognize that you have a crisis. And on that point, when you recognize, then it's over. But this is the sensitive thing that you really have to step out of your mind and to look from above and to see, oh, she has a crisis. Come on, wake up. And then you can perform in your 100% level. When you are in the crisis, you are maybe 60-70% and you are fighting against, oh, what is that today? Why can't I run in my pace? Oh, everything is so boring here. Oh, why am I doing it? All this mindset, what's going on there? And when you're listening with a good attention and awareness to these thoughts, these you have to train actually. Then you can stop it before it goes into the circle down, 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 down.
If you haven't already, please subscribe. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please leave a review if you've enjoyed the show so far. I'm John Horsfall, and on this weekly podcast, I talk to adventurers and explorers from around the world who have made remarkable and daring journeys in recent years. From Everest climbers to polar explorers, world record holders, and many more. I hope this podcast sparks ideas and inspires you to explore and go on an adventure of your own. But what is left for the adventurers and explorers in the 21st century? Well, let's find out. My next guest is an ultra trail runner and big adventurer. She has covered quite a wide range of the world, from discovering this thing called the Four Deserts quite a number of years ago. She suddenly decided to pursue it and became the first German and female to win the competition. On the podcast today, we talk about some of her incredible experiences and delve in deep into the sort of psychology of this sort of ultra running. We talk about the sort of mindset in which you need to sort of pursue and break through the sort of pain barrier when times get tough. And she gives some incredible advice on the podcast today about how to sort of focus your mind so that you can push through on these endurance events. So I'm delighted to introduce Anne-Marie Flammersfeld to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Thank you.
Well, it's absolutely great to have you on, and I cannot thank you enough for coming on today. I am so interested to sort of delve into the sort of psychology of this ultra running that you do, but as always, I always like to start at the beginning. So how did this all start for you?
Actually, it was really just by chance. I was not a runner before I met a person while doing just a simple holiday trip in South America. And there I met Gunnar from Norway, and while doing a horseback trekking through the jungle and the forests of Ushuaia at the end of the world. And Gunnar then told me something about that he's going to the Antarctic some days later. And I said, okay, what are you doing there? Some whale watching? And then he said, no, I'm doing a race, the Four Desert Race, the 250 kilometers to the coldest desert on Earth. You have to carry everything by yourself. And I just looked at him and said, what is he talking about? I had actually no idea that there is a longer distance you can run as a competition or as a race than a marathon. And so at that moment, I thought, okay, that sounds really, really cool. Maybe when I'm at home, I do some research, but I at that moment, I didn't know what was coming in my future.
So that was sort of how it all sort of kicked off. It was just by pure chance, someone had sort of said they're going to Antarctica, and then sort of the research started taking place and away you went.
Yes, definitely. I ran two marathons before I was a little bit into this running scene, but I was definitely not infected with that running virus at that moment. And I was going for a run or for a jog, yeah, just to move a little bit around, but not to run distances longer than 50, 60 kilometers. Yeah.
Wow. And I suppose when this sort of all started, because I like you say, it does take a while to get that running bug or the running virus. So from the process of doing those two marathons, what was the sort of kick that sort of made you jump into doing the four deserts or these big ultra endurance races?
Wow, good question. I haven't figured out yet. but I can tell you that at that moment when Gunnar told me about this name, Racing the Planet, Four Deserts, that there was a kind of a flame popping out of me. And I felt this enthusiasm at the moment to do something what I've never done before and never dreamt about doing it. So, but at that moment, there was something, I think, when you go around in the world with open eyes and an open heart, then things can come to you. And that was that moment I had at that time. And so when I was at home, I did this research and I saw that you can run through four deserts, each 250 kilometers, you're self-supported, everything is in your backpack. The organizer just gives you a tent where you have to sleep with 10 people in, and no shower, no hotel, no chef. You have to cook your own things. You have to carry everything what you want to have during 7 days, and you have to carry it in your backpack. And yeah, so I thought a lot about if I want to do it. And then I saw that you can do four in 1 year, or all four in 1 year, to get into this Grand Slam club. And then I looked at this club and there was no German at that moment. There were only 7 people and no one from Germany. And I said, okay, I will do it. I will bring the flag into the German national flag into this club. And okay, I will do it. And then it was April and I started with the training for the first race, what was in March, actually, the next year. So I had 10 months, 11 months of training, actually, to prepare.
And in terms of the training for that, were you based up in the mountains where you are now, or were you more at sea level? Because I imagine up in the mountains at altitude was probably a much better sort of fitness than you would have at sea level for something like this.
Definitely, yeah. Well, I'm born in Germany, and very flat. It's more or less under zero. And in 2006, I moved to Switzerland, and I'm really adapted to this altitude here at 1,800 meters. And of course, I have benefits when I go down and have a race at sea level, but the training on altitude is more exhausting because I can adapt to 90%, 95% of the sea level, but there's still these 5 to 10% leaking that I can't get into the same performance how I can do at sea level. So it is a harder training here. And everybody who was on altitude and wanted to train there in the normal speed or normal kilometers per hour knows that it's suffering of oxygen. Yeah. But of course, when you go down, then you have the benefits. Yeah.
So with that, you had 10 months sort of training. And the first one of these four desert races, where is it? For people who don't know from the podcast.
Yeah, it is in Chile, in the Atacama Desert, the driest desert on Earth. And then the second one is in China, in the Gobi Desert. It's the windiest desert. The third one in the Sahara in Egypt, the hottest desert. And then 3 weeks later, the coldest desert in the Antarctic.
So you certainly get your... Fair share of extremes there.
Yeah, it is this, yeah. I don't know, it's just, yeah, it was really extreme idea to do it, yeah.
And with that, they all take place over the year. How did you find the sort of adapting from the driest to move to suddenly the windiest?
Actually it was every desert was really, really beautiful and nice, and every desert was unique actually. And to go from the driest to the windiest desert, it was tough, but it was not so tough as to go from the hottest to the coldest, because there were only 3 weeks in between. And and from the driest to the windiest, there was at least 9 weeks in between. So I was changing back to normal, and then I went to the windiest. But it was quite tough in the Gobi Desert to run always against the wind, always. Sometimes it came from the back, but normally it was coming from the front. And you had to deal with it. There was no other choice. You could have sit down and wait for something better, but at least no one was coming. You had to do it by yourself. There was no one who was putting away the wind or the heat or anything else. It was just you and your mental thoughts. What was the driving force? How can I say? Yeah.
I'm not sure whereabouts in the Gobi Desert it takes place, but we had Ash Dykes on the podcast last year, and he sort of talked about his walk or trek across the Gobi Desert and said that you at moments you have just complete silence, and it's one of the quietest places on Earth, so much so that you can just hear yourself almost breathe. Well, not breathe, your heartbeat. You can hear your body functioning. Let's say.
Yeah, definitely. In all the three desert, it was, I'm the same. I felt the same. In the Antarctic, it was quite noisy sometimes from the penguins. They were making a lot of noises there. But I mean, in the Atacama Desert, when you go out and you have the most beautiful night sky with the stars there, and you think, you can grab the stars just when you lift up your arm. And that was really, really impressive. And yeah, the silence, the nature, the atmosphere, to be in a place where actually not a human being can survive a long time, because there is nothing, no water, no shade, there's wind. This is really unreal conditions. And you have to run to get further.
So with that, I mean, your background's in sort of sports science, sports psychology, was that key in terms of pushing through, in terms of training your mind to sort of go through this sort of suffering, let's say, and being able to cope in such extreme conditions?
Yeah, of course. When I started to train, I wanted to prove that what I've learned at the university, at the sports university, if I can do it in reality, or if it's just a theory. And so I have these background of all these training science and sports science. And so I wrote my training schedule for myself. And very flexible because I'm a person, I'm not stuck into today I have to do 20, tomorrow I have to do 10, I know that what I want to do, but I look around in my mind, which trail today fits for me good or suits to me or which one I like. Maybe I run 20 kilometers and I think, okay, where do I want to go today? What is fun for me? And then I start it. And then on the next day I say, okay, today maybe it's better when I do a shorter one. Okay, where can I go? Maybe I run up on that mountain and then go down, something like this.
That's the sort of psychology of it. It's about finding something fun while training to do it.
Yeah, for me, I would say it was the right schedule. And this is what I would recommend to everybody who wants to do something like this. First, the most important thing is that you really like to do, that you really like what you do, that you have fun what you do, that you enjoy what you do. When it's not, then it's every day, every time it's suffering and then you don't like it and then you are working against it and it costs a lot of energy. And it is better when you start a project totally, you don't have to run a marathon. It's just also a profession when your job or a project, it is, you really have to enjoy what you do. This is this is my mission actually, what I am. And yeah, the second thing is, of course, you need to improve your fitness to get better step by step by step. And I was listening to my body a lot. And when I felt there's a pain, maybe in my knee, then I stopped the training a little bit. And then I went to the physio. Then I increased the kilometers per week a little bit more. And when I saw that it was going on quite well, I was going on. And it is a sensitive mixture of what you want to do and what you can do. And when you don't listen to your body, then I think you can't perform in a good way.
Wow. And yeah, I suppose with that, for people listening, it's when you were going through, let's say, the Gobi Desert, having the wind in your face, was there enjoyment still there?
No, sometimes not. I'm honest, and I was honest in that always when I suffered. And of course, it is allowed to suffer, and it can't be every day 100% smiling and positive energy. There are crises, but I found out that the crisis can come and it can stay for 1 hour or for 3 hours, 4 hours, and it is. Yeah, it's a very, very bad feeling, but the crisis will go some moment. It will go over. And this is a fact, I would say. This is the crisis come and the crisis go. Boom, I would say. And the most important point, I would say, is that you recognize that you have a crisis. And on that point, when you recognize, then it's over. But this is the sensitive thing that you really have to step out of your mind and to look from above and to see, oh, she has a crisis. Come on, wake up. And then you can perform in your 100% level. When you are in the crisis, you are maybe 60, 70% and you are fighting against, oh, what is that today? Why can't I run in my pace? Oh, everything is so boring here. Oh, why am I doing it? All this mindset, what's going on there? And when you're listening with a good attention and awareness to these thoughts, these you have to train actually, then you can stop it before it goes into the circle down, 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 down. Yeah, I would explain it a little bit in that way.
Yeah, so the idea is that when you're doing these sort of trips or these expeditions or races, the idea is when you start to feel suffering, you have to recognize that you are suffering. Was that one of the things, one of the main things you were sort of taught in sports science, sports psychology? And then from there, you can acknowledge that this is only temporary and that you can sort of move forward from there.
Yeah, this is one method, actually. There are quite a lot of things you can do. Also, for example, to work with pictures in your mind. that you imagine something what helps you. For example, you have to create a picture from a place you really like, where you feel that there is a lot of positive energy, where you can relax. It could be, I don't know, a place in the nature, at a little lake or at the sea or wherever. It must be something where you can relax and where you are really positive. And then in that moment, you can just imagine that picture, and then all the positive energy is going from the picture to your body. And then you feel, everything is fine. I'm at my place where I can relax. And then you still can run with this picture in your mind. And it helps a lot to overcome a crisis.
So that was one of your main coping mechanisms when these sort of four desert races sort of put you into the extreme.
Yeah, I trained these pictures, the visualization, we call it, and with a mental coach, with a friend of mine, and we did some hypnosis, sports hypnosis, where I was forced to create pictures. And for example, my biggest concern was that how would it be when I'm in this heat, in these extreme hot deserts? Because I live here in the Swiss Alps, and I normally have 6 months of winter with temperatures between minus 20 to minus 10. And then the summer it's warmer, but we have maybe between 15 and 20 degrees. So it's not 30 to 40 degrees. And then my mental trainer, she said to me that I have to create a picture what cools me down. And so for that case that I was running in the hottest desert and that I was not able to deal with the heat, my picture was that I would imagine to run through an ice cold snowstorm, and that I have to feel the snow on my skin, that I hear the snow cracking underneath my feet, that I smelled the snow. So I worked this picture with all my five senses. And then I put it into my mental box. And when I was, for example, in the Sahara, in the hottest desert, and it was extremely warm and hot, I remembered my picture, and then it worked. And I even got a chicken skin from cooling down myself, even to thought on that picture of this ice cold snowstorm.
Goosebumps. The sort of
Wow. And so with those four deserts, you completed it in all of 1 year. And became what, the first German, the fastest female? Is that right?
Yeah, everything. Even in general, the first person, the first woman to win all four in 1 year. No woman has done it before. Yeah.
And did that sort of propel the ideas going? Because after that, you'd completed this challenge of the four deserts. And did that sort of propel you into thinking of more bigger, grander ideas, or?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I found out that I maybe had a talent in running long distances, which I was not sure that I had it. And so I was looking into this calendar of ultra trail running races, and I saw that there are a lot of races on all over the world. And then I looked but it was quite hard to find something not over the top, but to what is not similar, but a little bit different. But it was a little bit of a chaos. And then actually I started these bottom-up climbs project with two friends. And it was a little bit like when I met Gunnar. This time it was with a friend. We were in the ski lift, and he asked me, "Do you want to come with me from the lowest to the highest point of Switzerland?" I said, "Yes, I come with you." And I had no idea from where to where. So sorry, I live in Switzerland, but I knew that it may be the Lago Maggiore in the Canton Tessin, and but the highest point, maybe the Matterhorn. But it was the Dufour Spitze with 4,800 meters, something like this. And yeah, I said, yes, let's do it. And then it was so that My two friends, they did it with a bicycle because they're more cyclists. And I said, okay, I'm a runner. I found out and I will do it by my own feet. And then I did it in 5 days, actually, to run from the lowest to the highest point of Switzerland with 250 kilometers. Yeah, and 5,000 vertical meters, something like this. And yeah, and this was the start of the bottom-up climbs to go from the lowest to the highest point. And in that year after the Fort Desert, I also ran the Manaslu trail race in the Himalaya. And it was 8 days and maybe 16,000 vertical meters and 220 kilometers, something like this. And yeah, I was really into these running virus from that point on. Yeah.
It was sort of the adrenaline that you were sort of getting from these races or these challenges.
Yeah, maybe adrenaline, maybe it was the, to think that I can go all over the planet, not as a tourist, more than an athlete, to go from one race to another race and to explore culture, to explore places where I would normally not go to. It was more the exploring thought more than the adrenaline, actually. Well, I mean, it was the driven force, yeah. But I really like to do new things. This is also because why I never did two races twice. So I always did something new because I thought, okay, there are so many races at very nice places. And as long as I want to do it and as long as I can do it, then I go into places and countries where, yeah, maybe I will never go again, something like this.
Yeah, the sort of idea of using running as a way of experiencing the different countries, the different cultures. I think it's a really amazing way to sort of see different parts because you run through places probably which you otherwise would never have the chance of exploring. And by doing that, you discover so much more about the place and yourself and everything that sort of goes with it.
Yeah. Yeah. The culture things, and you see places and people, and the people see you running and they think, maybe, what is she doing here in my place? But it's so special. And I always met nice people around there. And I'm really thankful for that I was able to do it.
Did you on your sort of progression from not even a runner to suddenly doing these sort of epic challenges, did you have any sort of trouble? Because to sort of go from zero to a big runner, it must have been quite a transition for your body. Did you have any issues in the sort of transition or not really?
No. It was more that my body was reacting quite well. I was really surprised about this because the general medicines, they tell you, you have to be careful with your knees, you have to be careful with the hormone system as a woman, you have to be la 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 la. I said, okay, but nothing happened to me, so I think my body can tolerate these distances. And of course, sometimes I have pain here and there, and I have to go and see my therapist. And But I would say that I even look at my body a little bit more serious than maybe the general people, and that I see when something is not right. And so the transition from I think I'm still a normal person, but the transition to run long distances, it was, yeah, I think there was a force in myself. There was this power that wanted to come out and to run, just to run. Yeah.
Because you've done, as you said, some of these amazing trips. One that sort of caught my eye, which I found fascinating, was your world record Kilimanjaro run, which I have to admit, slightly jealous. There are sometimes on this podcast when people do something, I'm like, that's something I really would love to do.
Yeah, the Kilimanjaro. It was, yeah, very nice project, actually. And this was part of these bottom-up climbs, 7 volcanic summits. And we, with my two friends, we flew to Africa, to Tanzania. And we first started at the sea level to cycle 5 days through the country to get to the bottom of the forest on the, of the Kilimanjaro. And then we just walked as normal tourists up, up, up in 4 days on the Kilimanjaro. And then I had 2 days for resting. And I thought when I started this project, maybe it can be that I'm able to do it. And when I have the power, I will start and just try it. And I had really no good acclimatization. I was cycling 5 days with at least 350 kilometers through Africa. We came there and then we went up in 4 days. I was suffering a lot of the altitude. I'm not good in altitude, actually. It is up to 4,000, I'm good, but then I really need to have time. And we had no time because we had a really, really tight schedule. But I felt quite good. And then in the morning, 2 days after I was on the top, I started totally alone in these very, very black jungle. And this was my biggest fear, actually. My friends were there at the start and they were cheering me. And then I was alone. And I was so afraid that I maybe will meet an animal or another person suddenly. And I was just my big headlamp with these good light. And I was just running, 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 running. And don't look left or right. And then I was really happy when the sun came up and that my eyes were able to see everything and that my fantasy was not playing any tricks on me anymore. Yeah, and then I ran up in, what was it, 8 hours, 32, something like this. Yeah, and I broke the former record with 3 hours or, yeah. But when I came up to the top, I was really, because I was not definitely not acclimatized, I was suffering a lot. and I, every 1,000 meters, there was a guide and he was waiting there for me to see if I'm okay. And he had some water and some bigger, warmer clothes for me. And then on the top, there was one waiting for me. And I was so slow when I was coming up and I was so slow going down until 3,500 meters. And then I said to him, okay, now I can run again. I was able to run until my friends were waiting for me. And yeah, very nice adventure.
People listening will probably sort of wonder what's the sort of feeling like when you're at the top of Kilimanjaro, because you've run up, you've in what's 8 hours, and you've obviously suffering from altitude sickness. What's the sort of feeling that you're getting when you're up there? Did you have sort of time to sort of take in that you're at the top, or were you like, right, now I need to get down?
When I was on the top, I just thought I need to get down immediately. And I felt some headaches, some dizziness. I was not altitude sickness or sick, but it was more, my mind said to me, okay, don't waste too much time, just go down. And it is a big thing when you come up and realize that you have done it. I mean, the time, I was not watching on the time. I had my Garmin and I started the Garmin, but I was not looking on it the whole time. I never do it because it stresses me a little bit when I watch it all the time. And so when I was on the top, I just pressed it and said, oh, it's 8 hours, 32 minutes. Okay. And then I realized and then, okay, let's go down. Yeah.
And so when you got to the bottom, were there people there greeting you?
Yeah, my friends were waiting there and all the guides, because you are not allowed to go on the Kilimanjaro without guides. And everybody was there with some Prosecco or champagne or what was it? I got some bubbling water, sparkling water. And I got some blankets, traditional blankets and some flowers. And yeah. And then we went back to the hotel and I was so tired. And I think I got some fries or a pizza and two beers, and it was just party. Yeah.
I suppose that's the one good thing about sort of ultra running or ultra endurance running, is that after you've done it, you can stuff your body with whatever you want. It's one of the guilt-free pleasures you can get in life.
Yeah, this is really nice. And I'm a kind of person like this. I can suffer and I can force my body until a limit. But then when it's over, I say, okay, it's over now. Let's have the party, please. Yeah.
Wow. And so from that, your plan is the 7 summit volcanoes, which you've already done 4. And you've got 3 pending or 4 pending? Did you?
3, yeah.
3 pending. And when's the plan to do these 3 volcanoes?
Yeah, well, it's at the moment with the COVID situation, it's not so easy to travel. And there's the one in Russia missing, the Mount Elbrus, which will be the next one, because it's, it's easier, the easiest one of the 3 missing ones. And the next one would be the one in Papua New Guinea.
Yeah.
It's quite far away and a very long trip. And the last one, I don't know if it will be possible, but it's in the Antarctic, in the coldest. And it is really expensive. And I don't know if it's still makeable, with all this climate change in the world, if it's really necessary to fly there and to do something just of a private project. But yeah, we will see. Maybe there will be a chance that we can fly with someone who is going there, because it's really, really expensive. And then maybe we will get the chance when the chance is coming, like, let me say it in that way. But Russia, I would say it's possible. And the Mount Elbrus, it's calling, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting sort of topic that's sort of come more mainstream, is traveling for pleasure. And it's a sort of difficult one to sort of weigh up, especially when you're doing these sort of personal projects. Do you feel it's become a bit more of a topic with you?
These bottom-up climbs, these are actually quite nice for the environment, because I never use any motor. I just do it by myself, by my own power. I cycle or I run, but I have to go in a special country to do it. And when I do it once a year, when I fly one time a year or one time in 2 years, then I think it's still okay for me. And It's a big question how we can save our planet. And I think I'm not the person who is who can talk in a good way about it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's sort of one of these.
It's a very sensitive theme, and everybody has to look on him or herself, that how can I save water, how can I save energy? What can I do for myself? And and flying, of course, it's not so good. Taking the train would be better, but even to cycle would be the most, the best thing. And but from time to time, it is good when you can go out in an airplane to another country.
Yeah,
to have an adventure, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And have this sort of experience and sort of just see a completely different part of the world to yours. One of these wonderful challenges we face in the future.
yeah. When it's a unique challenge, when it's unique and it's quite good planned. But I think there are a lot of people who are saying, no, you can't go in an airplane anymore. But yeah.
Yeah, the drugs.
A different theme, yeah.
And with these trips, of course, your sports psychology has become sort of a huge part of it. Because, as you say, it's a lot of these sort of endurance things, it's more a mental sport than actually a physical. Because what I've found over the years of doing these is you can put yourself through so much more than you ever possibly imagined. Have you found that you've almost reached your limit, would you say? Or do you feel through the future you're going to keep pushing it, keep testing it?
Mm. Interesting question. I would say that in running, I haven't found my limit yet. I would say I can go further, and I would say when there would be a really need that I had, that I would have to leave my home and to go for, I don't know, then I would say I would be able to walk or to run as far as I can go. But I haven't found my limit yet also in racing, unless I'm ill or if there is an accident or something that stops me. But when there is no pain in the body, there is a pain in the body, but when it's not so just a big pain, like that it's ruin yourself or ruin a part of the body, then you can go. You can, when you can't run, you go. When you can't go, then you walk. And when you can't walk, then you, I don't know, you slow down until you stop. Oh. And the other thing is that with all these races and adventures, I learned that there is always a way. There always comes a way. And it is a little bit like this crisis thing. When there is a crisis, I know that the crisis can go. And I actually, my character is always, it was always a little bit like this. Let's try it out. And I'm not a person who says, is it possible? Oh, can I do it? When I feel that from the inside, this is this inner power or this flow, what we call it, then it is possible. I don't know what is the outcome, but for sure I will try it. And I love to jump into the cold water. And then I think, oh, maybe I'm not in the right place here. Can I go back? And something like this. Yeah.
There's a part of the show where we ask the same 5 questions to each guest each week. With the first being, on these trips or expeditions, what's the one gadget that you always take with you?
Music. I always make a playlist. And I always make a playlist with songs I've never heard before. These are new songs, and they remind me when I'm back. And a couple of years later, when I hear this song, I definitely know exactly where I was when I was listening that song.
So sort of in the Gobi Desert, you have your song for that.
Yeah, I can tell you when I'm listening to special songs that I was there, that I was suffering, and I was, that also in the Atacama Desert, I knew that when I knew that after the 5th stage, one more was coming, and I was at least 1 hour ahead of the second woman. I knew that when everything is going on like this, that I will win it. And I was going through this tent campsite, and I was listening to a song. And when I hear the song, I'm back into this feeling. I can tell you everything what it was there in detail.
So what was the song when you were going through Antarctica?
Antarctica. I was listening to more or less the alternative playlist with Snow Patrol and Bush. And Block Party, yeah.
Oh, good choice. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, things like this, yeah.
What is your favorite adventure or travel book?
I never read adventure and travel books. I got a lot of books. People gave it to me as a present, but I never read it because I want to get in my own experiences. So when someone says, oh, there's a book someone has written about that, what you are doing, I say, okay, thank you. But I want to be fresh when I go into a new adventure for myself. But now I remember that, and it's quite a funny story, that I read a book about Helga Henger. Helga Henger is the first German who was on the Mount Everest in 1990. And she was then doing the 7 summits. And I read a book, the first book from her, where she was writing about her experience and her adventure from the Mount Everest. And I read it in 2002, and in 2019, I met her here in my hometown just by chance, because she was here with her new book, and she was on a journey to present her new book. And I say, Helga, you are my star. and since that we are good friends. Yeah, this is the story about adventure books.
What about your favorite quote?
There are a lot, actually. This is maybe from Pippi Langstrumpf. You know her, this little girl from the book from Astrid Lindgren, the strongest girl on the world.
I don't, unfortunately.
Astrid Lindgren, she's a writer, and she wrote lovely books for children. And Pippi Langstrumpf, she's the strongest girl on the world. And she says, how can I translate it? We haven't done this before, and therefore it will go quite well. Is it right translated? I don't know. Das haben wir so noch nie gemacht, also geht es sicher gut. So it means like, we haven't done this before, so the output can only be positive.
Okay, good. Yeah. why are these adventures important to you?
Because I love to explore. I love to do new things. I love to put myself into situations where I've never been before. I really like to see how I react, how I can adapt to new situations. And yeah, this is actually my force.
People listening are always keen to sort of travel and go on these sort of expeditions like yourself. What's the one thing you would recommend to them to sort of get started?
To go, to do something like, I think I said it before, you have to really want to do it. You have to really feel joy and passion and this flame of enthusiasm to do something what gives you positive energy and where you can feel that it comes out of you. So don't do anything what someone is telling you. You have to do it. You have to go there. You have to do this. I think it's... You really have to find your own thing and your own project. And it must not have been that it's always faster or bigger or something more than someone has done it. Just create your own project that where you go out of your comfort zone. And this I would recommend, that you find your way and you're the kind like you want to do it, like you want to cycle, you want to walk, you want to go in a boat, you want to, I don't know, to go with a parachute somewhere. You have to find something where you feel quite grounded.
Yeah, I suppose with these, and like having spoken to a lot of people on the podcast, it's about knowing your why. And by having that and having a strong why means that you can sort of push yourself further and you can tolerate some of these hardships that you go through.
Yeah. And I would say it is, you need to have an objective. Without an objective, you don't know, rather you have reached it or not. But I think it's really important also that you have part-time objectives, that you are not disappointed when you are not able to reach the big goal. And I think this is also very important.
Finally, Nat, what are you doing now and how can people follow your journey in the future?
Oh, well, I'm on Facebook or on Instagram. Sometimes I'm doing little videos here from my hometown. I call them Hello from Switzerland. And there's a kind of funny little videos, and I hope that I can go on with my bottom-up climbs. Since COVID, I have done only little things. And this year I want to go from maybe from in Greece, from the sea level to the Olymp, to the highest mountain of Greece. You can follow me on the social media, and sometimes I'm writing my blog. Things are coming. But I like to be more outside than writing and typing something. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, it's been such a pleasure listening to your stories, and I cannot thank you enough for coming on today.
Thank you. It was really a nice talk. It was different to other ones. Yeah, very good questions.
Thank you. Well, I mean, it's really interesting because I think the sort of your head and your sort of psychology of it, and sort of being able to cope, putting yourself through those sort of tough situations, are hugely important. And thank you so much for sort of sharing that advice to the listeners and everything. I'll remember it next time I'm out.
Yeah, thank you. It's just coming out. I mean, yeah, I'm talking a lot about these things because people ask me always, but yeah, your questions were a little bit different. Yeah, yeah, it was nice, yeah. Oh. Not the standard ones, yeah.
Well, yeah. Thank you so much again.
Yeah, thank you, John.
Thank you for listening. You can watch the podcast on YouTube now, and don't forget to subscribe and review the podcast if you're listening on Apple. I hope to see you next week for another fascinating tale of adventure. But till then, have a great day and happy adventures.